हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 27, Adhyaya 1, Adhikarna 2, Anucheda 4. Kopi tad bandavo bhakto dakshina dvija vamshaja vivichya vyalikad grantam likitad vriti vaishnavai. Their remarkable friend, Gopal Bhatta, born in a South Indian Brahmin family, considering the truth from works written by previous Vaishnava acharyas, wrote this work.
This means the
Bhagavad Sandarbha. Yeah. So then, because he compiled all the different things and brought it all together, and then it was one work, so it was called Bhagavad Sandarbha. And then Jiva Goswami, then he divided it into six to make it more clear, to make the topics more exact.
Can we say that he gave the credit to the
family? He's here, Jiva Goswami is, but the work is accredited to Jiva Goswami. You know, because probably under him he did that work. But he's mentioning he's a friend of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. Sarva Sambhadani. Information has been taken from the work of previous devotees, Vridha Vaishnavai Likitat, like Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and Sridhar Swami. This statement eliminates the idea that the author has independently imagined things. Baladeva Vibhushan. This verse explains the antiquity of the work, and that he simply refined a previous work. The friend of Rupa and Sanatan Gopal Bhatta, considering the works written, likitat, by ancient devotees like Madhvacharya, taking the essence of that, he wrote this book. Anucheda 5. Tasyadyam granta nalekam krantam ut kranta kanditam. Parya lochata paryayam kritva likati jivaka. I have repeatedly examined the original works, the original work parts of which were in order, parts of which were out of order, and parts of which were incomplete. Putting it in a systematic order, I have written this work. Right, so Gopal Bhatta Goswami put together the original work. And then here he's making the point that he examined what's in order, which were out of order, and which parts were complete. And so then he just put it together in a systematic way so that the whole thing is in order and is complete. Sri Baladeva Vibhushan. Reviewing that previous work, Adyam Grantanalekam of Gopal Bhatta, Tasya, this living being, Jiva Goswami, has put it in order. Paryayam kritva, and written the present work. Granta, referring to the Sandarbhas, is a choradika word. By the word nyasa shranto yuch, Panini 33107, the verb takes the form of grantana, which means granta. Leka means writing. What was the nature of that writing? It was in order, krantam. Parts were out of order. Parts were broken or missing, kanditam. By Jiva's effort, it became meaningful. So it became more appreciated when Jiva Goswami, therefore, put it together. Adhikarana 3. Anubandha Chatushtaya. Anucheda 6 through 8. This is a briefing. Are we not saying something at these times, or? Like here it says Adhikarana Prakashita, here it doesn't. In the sixth Anucheda, Jiva describes the qualification of the reader, Adhikari, in the form of a curse to those who are not qualified. Similar statements are found in other sacred texts. Srimad Bhagavatam 112 states, Nirmatsaranam Satam, which means that the book is not for those who are envious and meant only for those who are Satam, truthful and non-envious. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita 18:67, Lord Krishna says, Idam te natapash kaya nabhaktaya kadachana na chashushrush shave vachyam nacha mam yo vyasuyati. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. In the seventh verse, the sambandha between the Satsandharvas and Srimad Bhagavatam is established. Verses on the Cheda, it's the same thing. Jiva Goswami describes that the Sandharvas are written to explain and elaborate the absolute truth as described in the Bhagavatam. In the eighth verse, the Vishaya and the Prayojana are described. The Vishaya, or the subject, is Krishna, the non-dual absolute who manifests in three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. The Prayojana, or fruit of the study, is that one can attain love for Krishna. Right? So that's what's established in this whole Mangalacharan. Has to do all these different things. So now he's doing this part. Right? So, Anucheda 6. Yashri Krishna Padamboja Bhajanai Ka Vilashavan Tenaiva Drishtayam Etad Anyasmai Sapator Pitaha. The person who desires only worship of Krishna's lotus feet should see this work. A curse is given to others. Right? But it's not that if you're not reading this work, you're getting a curse. It means if the people other than this read this work, they get a curse. Right? I mean, the others are cursed anyway. You don't have to say anything. Right? If you're a materialist, you're already sarva-sambhadini. This work, etat, should be seen by the person whose chief, Eka Bhilashavan, desire is worship of the lotus feet of Krishna. Probably better to put this like chief desire.
Yeah.
So then you can stop nicely. Those whose Che Eka desire for Krishna. Sri Baladev Vidyavushan. This verse explains the confidential nature of the work. If a person does not respect the supreme position of Krishna, it is inauspicious for the person to read this work, right? Because the ninth offense is to preach to the faithless. So they should avoid that offense. Because why? What happens? Why is it an offense? Because if you preach to the faithless then take what you've said and now use it to increase their envy in that of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So, therefore, he's pointing out they should not read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Marie, it's only for, special devotees.
It's just for devotees. Devotees could read, but it's written in Nyaya Prashtan, so it has to be someone who would appreciate that form. Right? Mm-hmm. So, the Sandarbhas then are, considered by all the, greatest, I say, scholarly work on the Vaishnava philosophy. Right? So when you're dealing with the Siddhanta, it is the work, like that, to put everything in place. But it's based on following the footsteps of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami.
Can we say that it is not a book for academic people?
It's not for academics. That's why we switched the translations. Yes. So that it's like this, because the first one we were using when we went through the first time, then we saw that the tendency was it was being written for contemporary academics to appreciate. You know, it's written for to appreciate.
Yes.
But because of that, then sometimes the flavor didn't carry the same flavor,
yes.
Right? Because you have to present, you have to use certain words and language and that to present.
Yes.
So in here, then it's not, it's just in its natural form. So then it much more fits that, you know, the study of the other books that we're doing, the Bhagavatam and that, it fits very nicely.
Mm.
While the other, if you were studying it just on its own,
yes.
And doing a presentation like that, that would work very nicely.
Mm.
But just, we didn't want to adjust the flavor.
Mm. Like
that. So, therefore, Gopi Prabhu is making accessible to those who were unqualified.
Yes.
But on their own, to just pick it up wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sense? Yeah. This work was written to give auspiciousness to qualified persons. It is not restricted for study because of fear of imperfections in the work, which some would criticize.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they're saying it's not for scholars because, oh, there's some imperfections, and if they read it, they'll, you know, like that. Since it has been examined and found to be without fault by the most knowledgeable scholars.
Mm-hmm.
That means, as we said, scholars of other sampradayas read the work because it's just so perfectly written.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that, yeah, that's the Anucheta 7. Atha natva mantra gurun bhagavat tar tadan. Sri bhagavat sandarbham vasmi lekitum. Paying respects to my mantra guru and gurus who have given the meaning of Bhagavatam, I desire to write this Sandarbha, named Bhagavat Sandarbha. Means the whole thing is called Bhagavat, but within the Bhagavat, then it has parts, six parts, and one of them is called Bhagavat. Sarva Samdadini. I desire, Vamsi, to write a Sandarbha composition named Bhagavat Sandarbha. Right? Because the Sandarbha, as mentioned before, it's a style of writing.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Right, so it'll be in that, where it's bringing out the conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It's specifically meant for that. It's not about the poetics or anything else like that. And so in bringing out the conclusion, then he's written it also in that the form of how you, the nyaya, the logic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's logic and presented, but it's being presented to simply bring out the conclusion. Give the proper definitions, give the proper relationships, give the conclusions based on that. Does that make sense? So that's, it's very clear like that. It's very exact. But it's not so exact that it's dry like Vedanta will be. Right? So it's basically you're getting the same thing without that dryness. Does that make sense? Because it's based on Bhagavatam. Like you notice when we were doing the Vedanta Sutra course, when it was just basically the prominence was the Vedanta Sutra, and the discussions there, it had a dryness. But as soon as we added in the Bhagavatam commentaries on those verses that applied to those Vedanta Sutras, then we saw that it wasn't dry anymore. Because as soon as Bhagavatam becomes the prominent, then it loses that. But the exactness and the technicalness was still the same. In fact, it was even easier to understand. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. So that's the whole idea. Sri Baladeva Vidyabhusha. Since it is the revelation of the secret and most essential knowledge, ataha, I desire, Vamshi, to write this Sandarbha, named Bhagavat Sandarbha. The wise say a Sandarbha is that which possesses various matters of importance which should be known. Right? So in other words, it's not information that if you don't know it, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, how many tsetse flies per square kilometer in the Congo? Yeah, it's, you'd probably go your whole life without knowing that quite comfortably. Bhagavatam verses are gathered together, sandri bhyate, Sanrib, together, becomes Sandarbha by the rule Halascha. Panini 3.3.1.2.1. Right? You got everything by that Halascha, right? That's the point. Panini, then he gives a commentary so you can understand what that means. So the difference is, Jiva Goswami will give a sutra that it has the meaning already in it. So even though the Sandarbha will be in Nyaya Prashna, it will still be that all the meanings are already within the context, even though it's presented through logic. So it's a very exceptional work. Because generally you have something that's very pleasant to read and clear will be a kavya. Yes. Right? But it doesn't get to Siddhanta. And things that get to Siddhanta, they're so terse and all that, and so dry that if you don't choke to death, then, yeah. So here, he gives the exactness, but at the same time it has that pleasantness, that sweetness. So that's unique. Anucheda 8. May Sri Krishna, Bhagavan Swayam, whose existence as pure consciousness is defined in some scriptures as Brahman, whose Amsa, the Purusha Vatara, controlling Maya, shines with his expansions, and one of whose forms, called Narayana, plays in Vaikuntha, give prema to those who worship his feet in this world. So this is where the Anucheda point comes in. See, it's actually two shlokas. But the two together are making one point. Sarvasamvadini. The author shows the meaning of the whole work in summary with an invocatory verse. The word api indicates the main meaning of Brahman, which includes statements like api satyam jnanam anantam brahma. Brahman is eternal, infinite knowledge. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.2. His Amsha, the Purusha, Puman, the Antaryami of all beings, called Paramatma, manifests through the Gunavataras and Leelavataras, Amsha, Kaihi. Yeah, so Paramatma is known as Purusha. So when you're talking about the Purusha, then you're meaning Paramatma. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have Paramatma's feature where he is in the heart of living entity. We have the feature where he is the totality of everything within the universe, as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and that he is these, so therefore the supersoul of the universe. Then you have the supersoul of the Mahatattva as Mahavishnu. Mm-hmm. So they're all known as Purusha. Mm-hmm. Right? A form other than Krishna, Ekarupam, called Narayana, the Lord of Vaikuntha, or the spiritual sky, and Lakshmi, as described in Padma Purana, perform pastimes in Vaikuntha. Narayana, though he is also Bhagavan, belongs to Yasya, Krishna. This indicates that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. This hints at the verse in Bhagavan which proves the point, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, 1.3.28. The word Sri and Sri Krishna indicates his Sarup Shakti, his constant companion. Right, that was the point the other day, because it asked if Krishna is taking the mood of Radharani as Lord Chaitanya, then what does Radharani do? Mm-hmm. But the point is, since Sri is always the constant companion, then she's there as Garadhar Pandit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, as we say, Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Yes.
Right, we don't say.
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes
we say also Sri Krishna.
Sorry?
Sometimes we say also Sri Krishna.
Sri Krishna. So it always means that Krishna is always with his internal potency.
Mm-hmm.
So generally when we're referring to him, if they're talking about something that's there, but they're just referring to him in that one, they'll generally say Sri Krishna.
Yes, yes.
But if it's a run of things, then you might say Krishna does this, Krishna is the Lord of things, Krishna like this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. The word iha means in this world. May Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, along with his Sarup Shakti, give or manifest vidattam, prema or intense affection to those who worship his lotus feet in this world. Right? So then you see is that these are all aspects of Krishna.
Yes.
Means that the Shastras describe him as Brahman, as his Amsha, the Purusha avatar, and then the Narayan in Vaikuntha, You know, so you have Mahanarayan, you have so all these different aspects of him. You have Brahman, that's there, then it's Paramatma.
Yes.
But then you say the you could say the Mahaparamatma will be Mahanarayan.
Yes. Yes.
Because he's that, so that mood of the Lord in which he is the, you know, creator, maintainer, destroyer, the judge, the, you know, the Lord, all these kind of things, any of these kind of aspects, his secondary names, they're referring to him actually as Paramatma.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's not that he's a person, but they're referring to that aspect.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then here's then, so he, that is there, and then the supreme of these aspects then will be Mahanarayan.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have Lakshminarayan, because that's considered Vaikuntha. Then from there he expands, and then you have the unlimited Vaikuntha manifestations.
Yeah.
And another expansion is the Vusha avatars in the material world.
Yes.
Yeah? Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan. In this verse, he speaks briefly of the works Anubandha, such as Vishaya, subject, in order to create taste in the listener. Swayam Bhagavan should give Vida Tam Prema to persons who serve as lotus feet in this world. Iha. Who is he? Belonging to Krishna, who is endowed with vibhutis, qualities and form related to his sarup. Yasya is that entity which exists as mere knowledge, devoid of various qualities, chin matra sata, and which sometimes becomes defined as Brahman in the scriptures. Right? You're describing as Brahman in the scriptures because it means Krishna is everything. So from his viewpoint, everything's him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so this oneness and that aspect and how he's pervading everything and it's all him, then that's the Brahman aspect. It doesn't mean that it's impersonal. It means it's impersonal in that it has the generic aspect, but it doesn't stand on its own. It's just a feature of Krishna. Right, that he pervades everything. Everything's based on him. He's the existence of everything. And he is one with everything because he's a non-dual entity. Right, but from the perspective of the jivas, then there's two. There's always the Jiva and then the Lord.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
So that's the aspect. So that's why I'll be defined as Brahman in the scriptures. So in the scriptures they define him as one and as different.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
For example, it is said, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Brahman is eternity and infinite bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 2:1:1. And astiye vau palabdhavya. It will be realized as it is. Katha Upanishad. The meaning is Krishna becomes contemplated and perceived as mere knowledge. It should be understood that for persons with bhakti, is perceived as a person with various qualities, right? So, for those who are approaching as knowledge, in other words, those who are situated in the vijnanamoy.
Mm-hmm.
So, for them, liberation is the goal. So, they only see the Lord as Brahman.
Yes.
Those on the theistic moralists who are on manamoy, who accept the directions of scriptures. And that these are given direction by the Lord. And so he'll be the judge. He rewards the results of your actions. Then he's known as Paramatma.
Yes.
Right? So these are the two aspects. Right? But these both belong to Krishna. Right? It should be understood that for persons with bhakti, he's perceived as a person with various qualities. Since after being described as Satyam Jnanam, he is described as Anandamaya Purusha, the person composed of intense bliss. Vijanta Stotra says, Nate Rupam Na Cha Karo Nayudhani Cha Kaspadam Tatrapi Purusha Karo Paktanam Tvam Prakashate. You have no form, no shape, no weapons, and no abode, but you reveal your human form to the devotees. So, for those who are not devotees, he has no form, no shape, no weapons, no abode. But for the devotees, he'll reveal who he is. Well, you know, where he lives, what he does, you know, like that.
So Maharaj, there are different perspectives according to our consciousness.
Yes, according to our consciousness, yeah. And depending on whether we're... Yes, depending on the consciousness. So that's why we're trying to situate ourselves in Anandamaya.
Yes, yes.
Like that. So that's what we study, that's what we know. But since Anandamaya includes the other four aspects, those other four aspects will come up in application to how they'll be applied in our lives. But it's not a separate discussion. You're just discussing the application of Anandamaya through the senses, or you know, in the social context, or in the religious context, or in the spiritual context. Because all these will apply in the life of the devotee. But if one situates oneself in one of those four consciousnesses, then it's given a different, it's given its own title. But otherwise, they're already included in bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, you see, within the rasa, the whole tattva is automatically included. Just like when we say about ananda, anandamaya, mm-hmm. and all the four are included. Just like all these aspects, when we see devotees worship Lord in with a particular mood, then the Lord also manifests in that particular form.
Mm.
That includes all other aspects of this jnana that the Lord manifests according to...
Yes, yes. Means it can all be explained.
Mm.
It's just that one only needs to explain how much is important to reveal or put one's attention towards the Lord.
Mm.
Or that to taste the rasa or sweetness in connection to the Lord. And more than that at one time is not necessary.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, let's say we have a conversation and there's someone that you have a conversation with and you can never continue on a specific topic.
Yes.
'Cause as soon as you're on that topic, you bring up something like that, let's say, you know, it's just like, yes, you know, it's just like the living entity, you know, crosses over the ocean of material existence, you know, by the boat of the, you know, the, I say, instructions of the spiritual master and the favorable winds and all these different things like that. Yeah, yeah, last summer, yeah, we were out on a boat and it was really exciting and all that. Like that. You know, and it just goes from there. And, you know, when was the last time you went on a vacation and all that? But, yeah, they're so different. It's so expensive nowadays. You know, I mean, the economy is really, really going down. You know, it's just, you know, so that's the whole point is that the Shastras, even though it's just Krishna, just one topic, they're talking about one thing, they'll stick to that one point and make that relevant for application. But it's not that all the other points aren't connected and can't be connected. You know? So we see is now and again that different stories that we think are completely different stories are actually part of one story. You know, just at different times and different situations. So that's just the Shastra. So therefore, I mean, one, that way then people who are interested in a particular aspect, then they're satisfied because it carries that flavor. But someone who appreciates Krishna, then all the different flavors are appreciated. That's why then Bhagavatam is for rasiks. Because it has everything in it. It has all the knowledge, it has all the topics and everything. But it has it all just how it connects to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So then that path of taste can be followed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have taste because it's about Krishna. And if someone, it's not so, I mean, it's not that they're not, they're devotees, but it's not that they, the taste in Krishna is the prominent thing. It'll be there. But they also have taste for other aspects of the, you know, how you say, Vedic literatures. And so, someone music, someone astrology, someone medicine, someone, you know, and so they get involved in those. And the taste that comes from just isolating that topic on its own, you know what I'm saying? Not necessarily connected to Krishna. Because if we appreciate the topic connected to Krishna, it'll always be seeing it connected back. So it'll carry that flavor. Does that make sense? So therefore, the Bhagavatam discusses all the topics, but from the perspective of the primary,
yes.
From Krishna, you know, from it's about Krishna.
Yes.
like that. While the other Vedic literatures will discuss the, how you say, they'll discuss those secondary topics on their own with occasional references back to Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Right? So it carries a different flavor.
Yes. And if you study alone, we can become lost.
Yes, that's the whole point. That's why one has to approach the Vaishnavas.
Yes.
One can't do it on one's own. Because the thing is what to gain from it. Since Krishna's energy is unlimited, you can go in unlimited directions. But what are we doing? It means we're going from... So all those directions all go back to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As it says, you know, how you say... means Krishna, there's one path, right? And so everything's going to Krishna. But depending upon which part of the path, how much of the path... You know, what combinations of aspects on the path, then we call it by different names. You know, it's like a road in Calcutta. It's one road, but every two blocks it changes names because, you know, it means, you know, they want to give credit to somebody, and so they have more people to give credit to than they have streets, so they just start to.
Shame.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just like, I think it's. I'm not sure what it is on the other side. I forget what it is on the other side. I just know from the temple side. So it's Wood Street, and then at one point it becomes near Mulchunder, and then after that it becomes College Street. Oh, yes, and then after that it becomes Chitpur. It's one road. And that's just from the temple up to what do you call it? Vivekananda Road. What's after Vivekananda Road? And what's south of the temple, the other side of the Pukur? I'm not sure what it's called over there.
Sometimes, Maharaj, this side of the road is called by something, opposite side.
Really? Even the two sides of the road? Wow, that's getting, what do you call it? Yeah, sophisticated. Here.
Especially in the markets when we want to go and purchase something. One side the address will be written something, and you see the opposite side. If you are going on that side, you see, oh, this street is not here. But you look across the road, the street is written.
It's there. Yeah, yeah. Yes. So, like that in Calcutta.
In Calcutta, we need to be very aware.
Yes, you do. You're not aware, you won't make it. Totally. I remember I mentioned to Bhavananda Prabhu once about Calcutta, because there's some of the old buildings in the old areas are amazing buildings. So I said, you know, so it's not to, you know, to lighten the atmosphere when you're walking through Calcutta and look up at the buildings. Bhavananda Prabhu said, I don't. I look down at the ground so I don't step in something. Yeah, you got a point there. You know, so he does. This is what we were talking about. You get off onto a tangent and then forget completely where you are. So we were talking about Krishna here. So the point is that we're going from all these energies are all connected to Krishna. But we'll go from one aspect, a variety of the Lord's energy, to another aspect of the variety.
Mm-hmm.
And just stay in the secondary and not go forward towards the Lord. Or even if you're going a little forward, it's not about going to the Lord.
Yes, yes.
So that way then you can have unlimited, aspects about what you're doing and keeping yourself busy. But at the same time, it's never about Krishna. So that's the thing about the Bhagavatam. It's just about Krishna. So even though it has all the practical, technical stuff in it, Bhagavatam, because the flavor is only primary, exclusively, it's many times it's thought that the Bhagavatam is just philosophy, nothing practical. Like that. You have to go somewhere else. And because they don't know the Vedic literatures, that means then you have to, you know, go to the contemporary knowledge. Like that. So instead of going to the upper avidya, they go to avidya.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But Bhagavatam then is the transcendental truth, because it just discusses about Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So all these aspects, you're talking varnashram, it's just part of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the service to Krishna and how it's used for Krishna.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And the Lord is not accepted by ancient authorities to be formless Brahman, since the Lord himself is not attracted to that impersonal form. So he's not attracted to that aspect or the Paramatma aspect. These aren't attractive to him. The Bhagavan is what's attractive. These are just him. You know, it's just like your elbow. Are you attracted to your elbow? No, but it's there, it's part of you. It has its function. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that, you know, wherever you are in public, you know, people are wondering, what are you doing? Wow, what an elbow. You know? Isn't it? You know, it's just, no.
We are concerned when we are sometimes in the elbow.
That's there. Yes. We're the pain in the elbow. The conditioned jivas, right? So he's not attracted by that. So it's not, he's not accepted in that form. He's as Bhagavan, he's accepted in the subjective form as how he identifies himself, how he likes to deal.
Yeah.
Means he is everything. But the point is the important is, well, how does he identify? How does he interact? How does he establish himself?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even though he's everything. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yes. So we see there's a switch from Brahman and Paramatma to Bhagavan.
Yes.
Yes. Right? Does that make sense? And from the materialist, then they switch from just being materialistic and just not having any, theistic element into being theistic, but approaching the Lord as Paramatma or approaching the Lord as Brahman.
Yes. Yes.
Because they want something material from them.
Yes.
Yes. So then Bhagavan means that that's not about that. It's just about him as a person.
Yes.
Yeah? The Purusha, Puman, the thousand-headed Sankarsana lying in the causal ocean, an Amsa of Krishna and the controller Prakriti, controls Maya and appears with his Amshas, establishing Maya under his control. All these H's should be capital. Agitating her by his glance and creating through her the universe. He becomes Prajumna with a thousand heads and the universe is half filled with water, and appears along with his umshas like Matsya. Vibhavati means to manifest his various lilavatars, who are called Vibhavas. Belonging to Krishna, Yasya, the one chief form called Narayana, performs pastimes, Vilasati, in the spiritual sky situated outside the eight coverings of the universe. Vilasati also means he is a Vilas form of Krishna. Vilasa is defined as a vibhuti with almost equal qualities as Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, who depends on no one else, but appears to be different because of a different form. This will be clarified in Krishna Sandarbha. So as we said before, Mahanarayana is there, he's there, he's a vibhuti of Krishna, so he's basically, so then these three these three features of Krishna, then he takes care of basically the whole, all the aspects of creation. Right? So Krishna takes care of the Icha, Balaram Kriya, and Mahanarayan Jnana. But through that, all aspects of the creation are dealt with. That makes sense. Adhyaya 2. Pramana Prakaranam. Section on, so Adhyaya, this is his breakdown?
This is the... He didn't break it down. He just showed it
to So he just goes straight through. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we made it into these, how that traditionally is used as the three parts. Okay. Pramana Prakarana. Section on means of true knowledge or proof. Right, so this is the epistemology, right? So epistemology meaning that how you know what's true. What is the proof? How do you establish what is knowledge?
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Adhyaya, summary. Adhikarna 1, Vedas are the Praman, Anuchedas 9 through 11. Adhikarna 2, Puranas are Vedic, Anuchedas 12 through 15. Adhikarna 3, Puranas are superior to Vedas, Anuchedas 16. Adhikarna 4, Srimad Bhagavatam, the topmost scripture, Anuchedas 17 through 18. Adhikarna 5, identifying and glorifying Bhagavatam, Anuchedas 19 through 26. Adhikarna 6, methodology of Tattva Sandarbha, Anuchedas 27 to 28. Right? Because then in the third adhyaya, then we'll deal with what is knowledge. means this is how to establish knowledge, and then the next adhyaya will be what is that knowledge?
Okay. What is the object of
yes. knowledge? Yes, yes. It means the knowledge is directed at something.
Yes.
And so what it is, so basically the dasa mool, that's ontology.
Yes.
And then how you establish that it's truth, that's epistemology.
Yes. In the Vedic literature, this approach of pramana and pramayata are presented in some particular books, or each book is using them. Means, for example, in this book, it is clearly about pramana and after pramaya.
Yes.
And it's in all book. It is the same thing. All Vedic book.
Means they all working on the same point, is that the Veda, Shabda, is the Praman. But now, how they go about there and what they put as important and all that, then depending on the philosophy. So the Veda will all be this.
Yes.
But it's not that people still don't come up with their own ideas.
Yes.
So that's how you get the six schools.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I think here, instead of summary, you could say overview.
Overview.
Yeah.
Overview. Okay.
Adhyaya Prakashika, Pramana. Pramana is defined in the epistemology of the Nyaya Darshana as Pramana Karana, an instrumental cause of valid knowledge. Nyaya Bhasha 5. Valid knowledge, Pramana, is further defined as Yatartanu Bhava, perception that agrees with the reality. Right? Because it should be that what's actually going on, you can perceive it.
Yes.
Right? But if you just perceive it through the senses, you don't know it in its complete, because knowing something as it is, you have to know it in all the aspects.
Yes.
So how it's coming from the Lord, so in other words, the spiritual, the transcendental, the spiritual, the metaphysical, the subtle, you know, the modes of nature and all those things, and the gross.
Yes.
So that the Shastra defines. So then seeing through the eyes of Shastra, then when you see something, then you see is that all that combines together, and then you can actually perceive, you know, the reality in its proper way.
Yes.
Right? So it's considered complete when you've heard something with Shastra, then contemplating that, you can see it in practical life through the senses.
Yes.
But if you start through the senses, you'll never get there.
Yes.
So,
there is a need of to open our consciousness to the Vedic approach.
Yes, that's the whole idea. That's the meaning of the Shastra Chakshu.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually seeing through the eyes of Scripture. Means others will to some degree,
yes,
if they follow these different schools, but because it's based on the Veda, but actually only when you're dealing with the proper Vaishnava understanding, then you can actually see things as they are. Okay. Perception that agrees with the reality. Nyaya Bhasha 7. Hence, pramana, comes from prama. Prama, is that supposed to be like that?
Yes.
Prama. Prama is valid knowledge, and pramana is the means of acquiring it. Okay, so prama is the knowledge and how you're going to get that knowledge.
Yes.
Similarly, prameya is the object
of that knowledge.
So same. That
okay. So prama is the valid knowledge. How to acquire it? Pramana, and prameya is then the knowledge that is
the
acquired.
Object of the knowledge.
The object of the knowledge.
That the prameya context.
Okay. So all nicely connected together. See, that's the thing. Sanskrit so nicely. It's so. How you say? Systematic. Yeah. Thank you. Vaishnava acharyas accept the Nyaya theory of pramana with some modifications. But the Nyaya theory is not the only one. Each school of thought in India has its own conception of pramana and prama and pramana. What true knowledge is, to what extent it can be achieved, and how. Footnote 9. Buddhist logicians, for example, prefer to define true knowledge in ways other than by corresponding to real things, because they deny that things exist at all. Right, because we remember we have the four basic theories of the Buddhist philosophy,
yes,
and each one is more I say non-accepting than the other. Until one, there's absolutely nothing. You know, unfortunately, they haven't gotten to the fifth one. Means that even their theories don't exist. You know, that, then at that point, then it would become a little more peaceful. Right? They do not accept any reality extending in time and space beyond the raw phenomena of each separate moment. Buddhists instead define truth in terms of capacity to inspire purposeful activities. So the interesting thing here is because the Karmakandis, they're violent, so you have to make them non-violent. They're thinking about the future because they're going to do all these things to go to the heavenly planets. So you have to make them give up that thing because that's also passion. You have to bring them to the present. And you can't worry about the past because that will bring up all the different things of, justice and all that, you know? And so that'll be the mode of ignorance. So you have to make them in the present. So to do that, then the philosophy makes it so nothing exists other than this moment that we're at right now. So it keeps them in the present by force, with no future, no past, no nothing. And that way they become peaceful because they become situated in goodness, because the present's controlled by goodness. And because they're inclined to use their senses in improper ways, they don't engage their senses because there's nothing. And in that way, then you leave it for a few thousand years and they become quite peaceful. Yes.
That you said that even the theory doesn't exist, that also happens at the final time when the Buddha, the enlightened one, he doesn't speak to anyone, he just sits and...
Yeah. Yes, that's all. Yes. Yes, and so it's just like when you're sick, you take medicine. When you're not sick, you don't take medicine. So when people are so sick they can't follow the Vedas, then the Buddhism is the medicine to bring them so that they are well enough that they could now follow the Veda. But it in itself has no more purpose than that. You know what I'm saying? Buddhists instead define truth in terms of capacity to inspire purposeful activity and in terms of consistency. Right, so purposeful activity means that it's done according to the rules, so that makes it mode of goodness. And consistency, so it's stable, that also puts it in goodness. So you see, everything's just designed to just put them in goodness because they've gotten so far off the track. Avisham vadakam jnanam samyag jnanam. True knowledge is knowledge that creates no contradiction. Nyaya Bindu 1. Nyaya Bindu is by?
By the Buddhist logicians.
This is Buddhist logicians. Okay. Yeah. So you can only get no contradiction when it's about Krishna. Because then everything being connected to Krishna, there's no contradiction. So they can't accommodate how you have God and all this, and therefore, even though it's a chintya, how there's no contradiction. So therefore, the easiest is just there's nothing. And so there's no contradiction. In this section, Jiva Goswami first establishes shabda, or verbal testimony, as the highest pramana, or the only certain means for acquiring valid knowledge. Then he establishes that Vedas are the pramana, because they are beyond the four human defaults, as they are apaurusheya, spoken by the Lord directly. Hence, the knowledge about the absolute truth can be gained only from the Vedas. But the problem of the Vedas is the presentation is lofty and very difficult to study and recite. And also the Vedas are interpreted by different sages according to their own interests. Therefore, people in the degraded age of Kali Yuga can't derive any benefit by studying only the Vedas. Mm-hmm. To solve this problem, Srila Vyasadeva has presented the Puranas and Itihasas, since what cannot be understood in the Vedas can be understood from the Puranas and Itihasas. The Itihasas and Puranas, which are forms of the Vedas, are established as proof. Itihasa Puranabhyam Vedam Samu Pabrim Hayet. One should clarify the meaning of the Vedas by the Itihasas and Puranas. Like, as you see how great personalities are applying it. Because that's the point. We're learning from what authority. So how authorities then apply the Veda, that's how we understand what is the actual meaning of the Veda. Because otherwise we can come up with our own idea. You know, like that, yeah.
personnages, the Advaita philosophy, they don't accept, they accept only the Veda, not the Purana and Itihasa.
Yes, because then it becomes more obvious that Krishna is the boss.
Right?
So, because if you're dealing in Nyaya, then it's logical. So you're not dealing on other platforms so much. And so then in that, then they'll just take those logical statements that are talking from Krishna's perspective, how he's one.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And so then that way then they try to base their whole philosophy.
Yes.
So they don't even use the whole Upanishads.
Ah, okay.
They just use what verses support what they do, because in the same Upanishad, it says all these other things also.
Yes.
So predominantly it'll be talking about the Dvaita aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But now and again, it will also bring up the Advaita aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but they'll just take the Advaita and leave the Dvaita.
Yes.
Like that. So, mm-hmm. So there, it's an imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
They're not accepting both. Because the point is both are there. Because if you have exclusive monism or exclusive dualism, then you'll always have a problem. That's why you see is the Madhvacharya only very, very strongly or ferociously is preaching the dualist aspect when we're dealing with the material consciousness.
Yes.
But as soon as he talks about Vaikuntha, he'll be saying basically the same thing Ramanujacharya said. Does that make sense? Because then it's about the relationship, the interaction, and all those kind of things. What's common with the Lord. But he just won't discuss any aspect of oneness on the conditioned platform. Right? Because otherwise they're saying we're God, or there's only one, or they merge, right? It's just so many ways they get distracted. So then if you just say there's only two, then it solves all of those problems.
That's why there's so much emphasis on the Varnashrama.
Yes. Yes, because then it also establishes everyone is different. So it all helps. And it's just like we say, for Buddhism, they're trying to just get them in goodness, but here, the followers of the Vedas, they're in goodness. So you're trying to bring them to pure goodness. Like that.
So Maharaj, all these acharyas, they have a very great vision.
Yes.
How to help the conditioned soul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's why we just try to help.
Yes.
That's why it probably gives the phrase, relevant instruction. Because
yes.
We're not giving instruction. That's been given by the acharyas.
Yes.
We give relevant means that it's useful to the whoever's hearing.
Yes, yes.
Right? Whoever's going to apply it. It were in their context.
Yes, yes.
It's being given.
Yes.
Like that. So that's what we can do.
Yes. Yes.
But we don't come up with knowledge. We don't come up with these things. We just give what's, you know, we try to make it relevant.
Yes.
Right? So if you're making it relevant for yourself, then you can help others make it relevant for them. But if you're not making it relevant to yourself, then that won't work for others.
Yes.
But by association, the chit potency is there, people will pick up and get benefit anyway.
Yes.
Just it's a lot easier if it's based on instructions.
Yes.
Though the Puranas are established as authority because they do not leave the meaning unsettled, those who are less intelligent still find the meaning of the Puranas difficult to grasp. Since the Puranas are unavailable in complete form and also because they instill faith in worshipping various devatas, it is said that the Puranas have five types. In Sattvika works, the glory of Vishnu predominates. In Rajasic works, the glory of Brahma is greater. In Tamasic works, the glories of Agni and Shiva are greater. In mixed works, the glory of Saraswati, as well as other devas, and Pitris is greater. One may say, quote, but the Brahma Sutras are also included in the Vedas. They can be used as proof, end quote. But their meaning is very deep and expressed in few words and hence difficult to understand. Vyasa, the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord, not that they can't be used, but we have to remember we're talking about Kali Yuga here. Right? You know, it's not that we're sitting around discussing what would be the process for us in Dwapara Yuga, because we're not there. Right? So his meaning is very deep and expressed in few words, so we won't have the capacity to really understand. Right?
Yes,
Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord, seeing this predicament, felt this dissatisfaction in his heart. By the instruction of his spiritual master, Narad Muni, he then manifested in Samadhi the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras, in which there is a harmonization of all scriptures. This ultimate scripture, which firmly establishes the meaning of Brahma Sutras, is Srimad Bhagavatam, which has 12 volumes and 100 divisions, with a total of 18,000 verses. It begins with a reference to Gayatri, which represents the meaning of all the Vedas. 100 divisions. Vyasa was unsatisfied with the Puranas and Brahma Sutras because the sweetness and highest powers of the Supreme Lord, Krishna, were unclear and secret in the manifested Puranas and the Brahma Sutras. He was satisfied with Bhagavatam because in that work there are statements showing the Lord's exceptional powers and sweetness. This work is most complete. It expresses the meaning of Brahma Sutras and Mahabharata. It is the explanation of Gayatri and reinforces the meaning of the Vedas. It is the Sam Veda among the Puranas and has arisen directly from the Lord. When it is said other Puranas like Matsya are the greatest, it means that they are great compared to other Puranas. Mm-hmm. The Bhagavatam is always the best. Mm-hmm. Bhagavatam is the greatest of all. Since Sukadeva, the speaker, is the guru of all the sages, all the great sages. Some Vedic propounders may still be stubborn and claim, quote, the Vedas are our proof. How can you accept Puranas as the proof? End quote. Because of this, Jiva Goswami wrote the Sandarbhas to explain Bhagavatam systematically in order to determine the highest goal. The method of the Sandarbhas is therefore similar to a commentary on Brahma Sutras. There is a statement of the subject, Vishaya, that which should be discussed, which is like the sutra. The explanation of the Bhagavatam verse is like a commentary on a sutra. Thus, in this section, the supreme self-evident authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam is established. This done, the Bhagavatam itself acts as the prime source of verification and remains so for the rest of Sandarbhas. So, having established the Bhagavatam, then you'll see he'll use basically the Bhagavatam as the prime source of verification. Mm. And then, In other scriptures who will give some further appreciation and all that, then that will be added. But otherwise, Bhagavatam itself, the points are all made by Bhagavatam. You don't have to have, there's not a point missing that you have to use another scripture. Bhagavatam has it, but if you want to give some further detail, something practical, you know, like this, a different angle.
So, Maharaj, the Sandarbhas are basically in order to even convince those who just consider Vedas as the only thing.
Yes.
So, Bhagavatam is presented in the style of the
Brahma Sutra. Yes, so he may not appreciate it, so then this they could appreciate. As you're saying, scholars will read this. They may or may not read the commentaries of the Acharyas, mm-hmm. like that, on the Bhagavatam.
Who wrote this Pramana?
The summary I wrote. No. It is from bits and places from all the within the Anuchedas, what Baldev Vidya Bhushan everybody wrote, I put it all together.
Yeah. Okay. So it's basically kind of an overview, like a summary of of the whole thing.
Yes.
So you're getting it like that. Adhikarana 1. The Vedas are the highest pramana. Adhikarana Prakashika. In order to delineate the four topics, Anubandha Chatushtaya, which have been already indicated, the proof is first delineated. According to the Nyaya, there are 10 types of pramana, means of obtaining knowledge. Right? So you have knowledge, so it has to be what's of value. Then you're going to have the means of obtaining. So there's actually 10 types. So that's why it comes down as, when you say the epistemology, is which ones do you use? Which ones are prominent for you? Does that make sense? It's like pratyaksha is a bona fide source of knowledge, you know, as one of the things. But through that, you won't come to conclusions. So that's why you don't see animals generally sitting around discussing, you know, the conclusions of the Vedas, because they only use pratyaksha. Like that, and a few can kind of use anuman to some degree, but you never how you say? You don't have the problem where you're going to sit down and eat and the dog comes up to you and says, according to Manu, a householder, a religious householder, is supposed to take care of his dependents before himself. You know, in other words, my bowl is empty. Right? Like that. Because that's what Manu says. So we don't hear the dog saying that.
We indicate bowl. By shouting.
Yes. They just let you know that you need to, you know, how you say, apply yourself to.
But so the monkey is more advanced because he can feel. He's thinking, no?
Yeah, he figures things out. But then you see, he's still only eating, sleeping, and main defense. They won't take it beyond that.
Yeah.
Even if they are intelligent, they can come up with all kinds of things. They still will not take it beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, I think it was just died recently. There was this one big ape, I think a silverback gorilla, that had a 900-word vocabulary. I think it was all sign language. I don't think they would sit there and talk and, you know, let's say, how you say, they were trying to find out which accent to use, and they found out, let's say, the Scottish worked best and all that. The Queen's English just was a bit too much. The monkey couldn't get the, you know, get the right elocution and all that. So they could talk all kinds of things. So one of the things that came up, I think something had died there, you know, an animal or something like this. And then they ask about this, what happens? And the monkey called it the great sleep, or the long sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Just means they go to sleep and they just never wake up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because normally sleep you wake up, but this one you can't wake them, they just sleep. So still they don't see beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
Yes.
They'll categorize it according to that. They may have finer divisions and all that, but that's just, you know, that's the whole point. That's the uniqueness of human life, is you can determine beyond that. So if you don't, then it's a waste, because, you know, if you're just interested in sense gratification, it's wasted on the human beings, because the animals are so much better at it. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like being at home and you play all day, and then you go to school and you play all day. But you can't play as nicely in the school as you can at home, so it's just a waste. Many great acharyas such as Srila Madhva, except that among them three, Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda, are independent sources. Since the remaining seven pramanas are merely special applications of the three. Right? So that's the important point, is that all these ten are being used. But the point is the other three are main. They're independent, that they have completely different positions. All the other seven are subdivisions of these three. That's why I say it was like Gotama with some adjustment, because Gotama accepts four. And then he takes six special applications. But then the acharyas, then they all show that no, there's only three. And so even that fourth one that he accepts is still subservient to these three. You know, it may be more major of those seven, but still. Srila Jiva first establishes in Anucheda 9 that Shabda is the only reliable source of knowledge because it is free from the four human defects. In the commentary, he explains the fallacies of Pratyaksha and Anuman Pramana in detail and thereby proves the superiority and independence of Shabda Praman beyond doubt. Since Shabda was concluded to be the proof, one must consider the nature of Shabda. Hence, in the Anucheda 10, he explains how Vedas are the actual Shabda Praman, and all other sources of knowledge obtained by any other means are useful to the extent they concur with the Vedas. Then, in his commentary, right, so Shabda is the actual source of knowledge. All the other means have the use in how they are connecting to and support Shabda.
Yes. Yes. Right?
Then in his commentary, establishes the epistemological precedent and independent position of the Vedas. Because Shabda, then it has to be something, so then he establishes it's the Veda that's Shabda. Right? And then from there to continue. After this, in the Anucheda 11, Srila Jiva establishes the process of accepting Veda. The process of accepting Vedas is through the deductive means, and all other speculative means for understanding Vedas are futile. Establishes the process of accepting Vedas. Srila Jiva established the process of accepting the Vedas through the deductive means and all their for understanding are futile. No, you want to drop off the is. Because the is means that this is the method. Mm. But when he says accepting the Vedas through these means and all over therefore are futile means you're not. So you don't want the is there.
Mm.
Okay. Then in the commentary he elaborates on the subject of the perception of higher truth through language. Right? So how you're going to... Because you're going to be using language to discuss. Remember, now we're again coming back to that technical point on how can you discuss transcendental subject matter through basically mundane instruments.
Yes.
Like that. So how this is going to work? What's the mechanics? What you're dealing with?
Yes. Basically, these three anuchedas constitute of the most, defeating the whole contemporary ideas and understandings. So this is a very big one.
Okay.
This continues till the end of this adhikarana is like till the end of this book. This adhikarana is very long, that's why.
Oh, okay.
Because we are now.
Oh, you mean so there'll be other adhikaranas, but it's adhikarana one is just being explained through the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the six questions of the sages.
Mm.
Okay, there's so many questions after that, but they're all stuff like that. Okay. Summary of adhikarana. So of. Adhikarana itself,
of this adhikarana.
Okay. Vishaya, to understand the absolute truth, Vedas are the only reliable praman because the Vedas are aparusheva. Shamshaya, this is not true because we observe in our daily life that knowledge is obtained by other means as well. Purvapaksha, according to the Nyaya, there are 10 pramanas or means of obtaining knowledge. Most of the knowledge we obtain is by pratyaksha or anuman. So how can one say that these are not valid? So uttara. All the other sources of knowledge are subject to the four human defects, hence are useless as independent pramanas in understanding the absolute truth. Right? Means not that they're not pramanas, so the accept them as that, but they're not independent pramanas. They have to be based on shabda. Like that. Purvapaksha. Then the doubt again. But whatever is testified by everyone through pratyaksha must be true, right? So if everybody says it's true, it must be. This is vox populi, right? So it's always been around. So it's accredited to the Greeks, but it's always been there. So if we gather all the people and testify the validity of knowledge, then pratyaksha will be free from the false, right? Of course, how they're going to get everybody there, and that's. Uttara, the opinion that all persons can perceive through the senses must be true cannot be substantiated, because to gather everyone together in one place is impossible. And the opinion that what many persons can perceive should be true cannot be accepted, because we see that in some communities and in some authoritative texts written by human authors, certain matters are wrongly understood, and different groups see in different ways and all things like that. Just like you have traffic, right? So there's two lanes, and then there's the shoulder, right? So depending upon where you are, but generally speaking, is a regular thing. In the first world, those two lanes are the only viable lanes for traffic. But if we come to most other places of the world, that shoulder is also a great opportunity. Yeah? So a very difference in how they view it. And in fact, when you come to Bengal, I mean, India in general, but especially Bengal. Why the two means, in other words, I'm moving forward in one lane, and someone else is moving in the other lane, and then there's the what's off the road. But in Bengal, my moving in my direction, my using the other lane and the opposite in my direction, if no one's there, and the shoulder. So therefore, it's the most complete in that all lanes are usable by the individual at any time. Right? And, but when you go outside of Bengal, then there starts to become differences of opinion on this. Yes?
Yes.
Purvapaksha, the cause of lack of truth is because of some false anuman. True anuman does not err, since there is a generic form for making inference. Right? So they move on from the pratyaksha because they have nothing to say. That no, that the cause of lack is false anuman. So they change the topic, actually.
Yes.
You know, the point. You know, but trying to do it in such a way that it sounds like they're just logically progressing through, right?
Very interesting. So many points they come up with. So I could put it in very systematic order.
Yes, yes. No, very good. Very good. Utra, since there is uncertainty in pratyaksha regarding its truth, anuman is unreliable even in the case of equal extension, sama vyakti. Even in something where if it's sama, it means it works both ways. You know, just like where there's smoke, there's fire. But where there's fire, there doesn't have to be smoke. So it's uneven. It only works in one direction, not in the other. So even you have a anuman that works both ways, still it could be wrong because you may not be applying it, the situation you're in, all these different things.
And also it is based on the pratyaksha.
Yes, it's based on the pratyaksha.
What
so
you see.
What you see. Well, the thing is, if you start from shabda, then you know that you're dealing with truth. Now you apply the anuman. Then when you can see it, now you know you've made the connection.
Yes, yes.
But because you started with pratyaksha, then apply anuman, even if it's sama vyapti, then it doesn't mean you'll get to conclusion.
Yes, yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Purvapaksha. The Vedas depend on pratyaksha for producing truth. And where contrary to pratyaksha, they do not produce truth at all. Thus, Vedas are not to be accepted as proof.
Mm.
Right? So he's even here, so going against the Vedas.
But their arguments to establish their thing has failed. Now you attack.
So now they go after the Vedas. Before it was the Vedas are okay. Because you see, before when we got with Ashankya, you produce like that, then they'll even step out of the Vedic and start quoting Buddhism. Mm. Because that's the whole point, is the living entity doesn't want to be wrong. So they'll use any means. Right? The means justifies the end. I mean, the end justifies the means. So the end is, I'm right. So any means. Right? Okay. Utra, that is not so because the producer, the Lord, is beyond all obstacles or faults. The knowledge derived from the Vedas does not contradict the authority of pratyaksha, even in affairs related to daily life. Sam vya vaharikam. And in subjects beyond the scope of the senses, they cannot be contrary to perception. Rather, the Vedas are the source of truth, whereas pratyaksha does not produce such knowledge. Because it's coming from the Lord, that's the whole point. So unless you accept the Lord, it's very hard to actually understand absolute truth.
Yes.
It's just, where's the possibility? You're not working with anything.
Yes. Yes. So there is a need of argument. If
yes.
You accept Krishna, there is a need to argue.
Yes, they still have to argue. Yes. It's just part of what you had to do. Right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.
Hare Krishna.